Welcome, everyone, to episode 52 of the Single Malt Strategy Podcast. I'm your host, John, the Strategy Wargamer, and today I have my co-hosts, as usual. I have Eric Tortuga Power and Matt, the Historical Gamer, but we have a special guest today. We have Vic, who's the developer behind Shadow Empire. So welcome, guys. Thank you for coming, Vic. I really appreciate coming onto this episode and talking about the upcoming game that you have in the works.
Well, thank you. Happy to be here.
So, how's everybody doing today?
I am doing wonderful. Actually, with this coronavirus stuff, we're forced to work from home, and it's kind of a downer. I don't have the proper, work from home environment. So,
are all you guys working straight from home?
Yeah. I mean, they're making us this. This is going to be a global trend that people are going to be working from home more and more often, especially in the business I'm in. So how's Matt doing?
I'm doing great. We haven't started working from home yet, but I've basically been told expect that to start either Monday or Tuesday. There's been a whole bunch of emails about make sure you're bringing all your stuff home, that you're prepared. We had some emails from our VP today who was like, we have these subscriptions to Microsoft Teams, but we don't really use them. We should probably get these collaboration tools actually up and running so that everybody knows how to do this, so that that we can kind of remote the office. So it'll be interesting. I work from home from time to time anyway, so it's not new, but there are definitely certain types of meetings that I prefer to be in person for. So it'll be unique.
I'm kind of curious, Matt, do you have two screens?
I have two screens at work and at home.
Okay, so I was thinking is when you work from home now, you could have one screen with Microsoft Teams and the other with Shadow Empire on your side.
Generally when you work from home, I think the expectation is that you actually work.
You actually work. Who would have thought?
I mean, if I'm being recorded, that's what I have to say anyway.
how are you doing, Vic? How is I believe you're in France, right?
Yeah, and you guys are all in the United States, I guess, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm on the East Coast. Matt is in the center of the country, and then Tortuga's on the West Coast. So we kind of we spread our wings far.
Yeah, I'm in France, and I always work at home. So for me, there is absolutely no difference.
Well, that's gonna be nice then.
But I've noticed already some stuff happening. I just lost a tester because he's being called up by the German army because he,
oh, wow.
I think he had experience working in field hospitals 20 years ago or something. And they're calling up everybody who has at least a few years of experience, even if it's very long ago.
Yeah, I heard something about Germany calling up the reserves, and I wanted to make a snarky joke about France and Germany, but
old school rivalry.
Well, you guys have done.
Just to be clear, I'm not the French. I'm actually Dutch. So,
oh,
as the last name would imply,
indicate. Yeah,
yeah.
it's a horror to have that name here. Nobody can pronounce it.
Well, I don't think I can do any better. So,
just call me Vic. Everything will be fine.
Yeah, I had the same problem today. I went to Walmart and they were like, "What's your name?" I'm like, "Jean." They're like, "John?" I'm like, "No, Jean." They're like, "Jean." And I'm like, "No, Jean." Like Jean-Luc Picard. And they're like,
Jean-Luc
Picard. I'm like, "Oh, gosh."
They should have got it when you said Jean-Luc Picard. He's famous enough that I think people would know that.
He had a blank stare when I said Jean-Luc Picard, so I'm assuming he probably never heard that before.
Oh, that's sad. I was just going to say, because I know we're going to get to Shadow Empires eventually. Vic and I actually have a very long relation.
Yeah, we do.
In that...
It's not a very deep relation, but
no,
it is
not
a
very
relation,
deep.
Isn't it?
That's true. But Vic's known me on YouTube longer than either of you two. Did you know that?
No, how's that?
There's a story. Oh, well...
Was he somehow involved in this helicopter
thing? No, no,
from...
But... my very first series on YouTube was probably a decade ago, and I did some little thing on Kerbal Space Program, which was actually meant as a tutorial for my father. But then, much after that,
Vic is your father?
I left it for 3 years, and then the next thing I saw, I think Das Tactic was doing, well, he was back then Das2468, whatever his name was, but he did a tutorial, or he did some series on a game called Advanced Tactics Gold. And I was like, nobody does this on YouTube, but it's such a great game. Why doesn't anybody do it on YouTube? And what's more, I was always thinking, you know, Das, he plays really well, but I think I could do it a little bit more efficiently, and maybe people would want to see that. So that was the start for my, the reason why I started creating videos was to do videos on Advanced Tactics Gold. And at some point along, I don't know when it was, but Vic, I don't remember actually, Vic, did I contact you? I can't remember, but Vic put my series up on his Twitter. And I think that probably catapulted me to be more popular than I otherwise would have been. So,
well, thank you.
So Vic and I know each other from way back when.
I wasn't aware that I had such an influence.
Such an influence.
No, but I tried to make a point, like on my own website, I'm going to list your podcast as well, because for some reason I missed it until now. And I keep track of all podcasts on my website, so players who visit me can also find the podcast, the different podcasts that are out there. So I will add this one as well.
We appreciate
hopefully
it.
You will see a bump as well.
Yeah. So that's my story.
But anyway, I remember Tortuga, like at one point, I think I thought it was very funny. I think you actually did a YouTube series called something like Playing Advanced Tactics Against My Father.
Oh yeah, I did. That's right. That was my first play-by-email multiplayer game, actually, in Advanced Tactics. So
I thought it was quite funny. I watched quite a few of your episodes.
Wow.
Because, no, it's great for a developer to watch like people playing your game on YouTube. It's great because you actually see everything they're doing. And on top of that, you hear what they are thinking. They're telling everything. Like, if they're confused, like, now I have to click this. Where is this button? Where is it? Like, making a note, you know. Player cannot find button. I love to listen to YouTubes of other people playing my games. Hmm.
Do you ever, when you watch folks playing your games, do you ever see that and you're wondering, like, why the heck did they think that was a good idea, or that would be something that they should be doing in the game, or what have you?
Sure.
No, well, not when he's watching me, of course.
I have to say, like, Tortuga was had quite solid YouTubes on Advanced Tactics. Didn't spot many errors there. But yeah, it happens. Like I think even, I don't remember what, but like there must have been some moment he said, like, and this works as follows, and they're like, okay, it doesn't work like this, but I'm not going to comment on the rest of YouTube to, you know, to correct people. It's almost correct, like.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, I have a tendency to have rather complex algorithms running, so it's quite hard to get everything correct, especially if you're like recording live. I mean, if you're writing, it's a different thing than if you're talking. There's no time to check effect or something, so you're bound to make some mistakes.
I also think in every, just as a blanket defensive statement in all YouTubers, one thing you do see with YouTube, which you probably don't see as much with like reviews, is the instantaneous emotional reactions to stuff where people, like, I've done this several times where it's like, the AI is really messing me up, you know? So you get this very emotional reaction where people have even like a minute to think, and if they were trying to write an angry letter or something, they probably would calm down before they finished it, so.
Yeah, I'm always afraid like somebody's going to hit a game crashing bug or something while playing, and then leaving it in the YouTube to punish me.
That's why I always like to say, this is version this. Like whenever I try to do like a review or something like this, hey, by the way, I'm playing version, you know, 1.1. So hopefully when they see the video and it's like, well, version 1.4, it's like, oh, they probably fixed that between then. Hopefully. So to start off the interview, before we dive into like Shadow Empires or your previous games, I wanted to know, what were your favorite strategy games growing up, and what kind of like inspired you to start getting into developing strategy games?
Right. Let's start at the beginning. I'll try to be brief. it's a long time ago, but I think I started playing like war games at like maybe like 10 years old or something. I had an Amiga 500, and I had a huge amount of floppy disks with games that arrived free for some reason I cannot disclose. And I think I had every game for the Amiga, and I always liked, you know, the games with the little tanks in it and like the SSI games. I remember playing Storm Over Europe. I was really into that game, I think, at that age. And I tried the games from a Japanese studio, like Romance of the Three Kingdoms, like the first one. I think a little bit later, like Warlords. I liked Empire Deluxe. And I even played like the first Grigsby game, like War in the East and Second Front, I think they were. Was it War in the East? I think it was War in the East, right? Or might have had a different name.
I think it was, yeah.
Anyway, it was like the yellow map and like the small corpse counters and stuff. And when I was young, I didn't really get everything, but I sort of got into it. And I don't know, I started making games, I think, at like, I don't know, like maybe 12 years old or something.
Wow.
There was this really neat tool on the Amiga called Amos, which was sort of like basic, but with very easy access to the graphics of the computer. So you could make your own little games. I think mostly did like small adventure games and stuff, but... I think I started making my first game, People's Tactics, must have been like somewhere, I don't know, like around 20 years old or something, as a fun project. And after I finished that one, this must be like 15 or, I don't know, I lost track, like 15 or 20 years ago, like beginning of 2000. I did People's Tactics as a freeware game. You can still download it, by the way. It still runs on Windows. And after I finished that one, I wanted to make People's Tactics 2, and I got contacted by Matrix Games, like if I wasn't interested in like monetizing my time. And then I ended up making Advanced Tactics, the original version, which afterwards got updated into Advanced Tactics Gold, the game Tortuga Knows. I think I'm already way beyond this question. This is not when I was growing up anymore.
I mean, it segues really nicely into another question we were going to have for you anyway, which is, can you tell us about the other games you've developed? Because you got to Advanced Tactics, but there's a big series you haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah, I didn't mention the size of campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked Advanced Tactics, but it was also very, very fictional, in the sense that like it's a game that the engine is centered around creating a procedural map with empires which are called like the Black Empire and the Atlantic Federation, blah blah blah. It's very fictional. I had this being an historian, like I got my, what do you call it, master's degree in history, and I have a very strong interest for World War II. I really wanted to do something more historical, so that's why I started the Decisive Campaign series with part one. It's the Blitzkrieg from Warsaw to Paris, which basically handles the invasion of Poland and France and the fictional invasion of England. Afterwards, I did Case Blue, and the last entry in the Decisive Campaign series was Barbarossa, which I did together with Cameron Harris, who did a lot of work on this title. And that's for now the extent of the Decisive Campaign series.
So you did a lot of, you know, historical games, right? Whether the Decisive Campaign series, you know, Advanced Tactics Gold, sort of has its realm. I know there's a lot of fictional stuff there, but feels at least more rooted in the real world. What you know, what prompted you to kind of change course with Shadow Empire?
Well, for me, it's more getting back to the beginning, because as I already said, like, for me, Advanced Tactics, the core concept, it's more fictional and it's more procedural. Like, it's like random games, which for me, they were the passion to create Advanced Tactics. And a lot of World War II content has actually been added to the game by modders and by scenario designers, and not actually by me. So Advanced Tactics was released, I think, in 2008 or something, around 2007, I don't remember. And then I spent a lot of time on decisive campaigns and on history, and I felt the urge to express a little bit more creativity. So that's why I switched back to making a procedural game, which is Shadow Empire. And what I've been trying to do is to, in fact, merge the strong points of the Advanced Tactics game series and the Decisive Campaign series into Shadow Empire. So to have a strong random-based game, but which also conveys a sense of context and history at the same time. Albeit it's fictional, right? But so that's been a bit my design drive with Shadow Empire, to sort of merge the two concepts into one game, which was rather ambitious.
I'm kind of curious, where did you... So when I started playing the game, I was kind of very intrigued about the storyline of Shadow Empire. I'm kind of curious, what kind of books or movies or shows help inspire you to develop this really interesting storyline for Shadow Empire? Because I believe you're part, or you were part of an intergalactic like federation, and then there was a dissolution war, and now you're trying to reconquer the planet.
To refine that a little bit, John, can you just... You know, for listeners who might not be aware of what Shadow Empires is, I think you've kind of touched on it a little bit. But like, if you were to give your elevator pitch of what Shadow Empires is, can you give us that, and then we can kind of talk about like the storyline and the background behind it that John was asking.
Yeah, I hate those kinds of open questions. But
you can ask us what we think it is, because
no, I can give it a try, but there's so many different. I'm going to try to be short, and I already told you a bit there. I said it's like I've been trying to merge Advanced Tactics with Decisive Campaigns, and basically what it is, it's like it's a 4X game. Which is also a war game, and which has some rather strong role-playing game aspects at the same time. So it's if we look at the genre of the game, it's really a blend of different genres. And if we look at the setting, it's basically also a mix. There's a bit of science fiction in there. There's a little bit of post-apocalyptic in there, and there's a little bit of like, in a way, there's a little bit of like World War II era military setting in there as well. And with so many mixes, I think it's finally I can say it's quite a unique game. I don't think there's many others like it, if there are any. And for the other question that came before, the Dissolution War, the thing is, it's a random game. So Advanced Tactics was also a random game, but it dropped you into a game without context or story. So I thought, like, what's the best setting to put somebody in? Like, I want to have sort of like the same sort of technology level at the start as in Advanced Tactics. I cannot put it on Earth because it wouldn't be random. So that's why I said, like, we have to put it in the far future, but where there's many planets, so you can always have like a story to say, like, yeah, this is planet X. It's always been like this. It's not really random.
I'm kind of like curious. So the storyline for Shadow Empire, did you just come, like, did you, like, just get an open piece of paper and just start writing? Or, like, did you, like, think back to, because it kind of gave me, like, when I was playing and I was thinking, I was like, man, this reminds me of a multitude of movies kind of combined into one. You know, it reminds me of, like, a couple of post-apocalyptic movies mixed with a little, like, Star Wars kind of thing. So I really liked the whole storyline. You know, like, you're part of a galactic empire and it falls apart and now you're trying to reconquer the planet. And, you know, it feels post-apocalyptic because of this dissolution war. So I was very intrigued by the storyline. That's what kind of got me very immersed into the game.
Yeah, I love to. It was a very nice job to create it as well. I like this kind of work. And yeah, it's the actual source. I think it's multiple sources. I read a lot of science fiction. Really a lot, a bit less now, but must have read thousands of books in my lifetime. So I think especially what I especially used maybe as input is like recently, like 2 or 3 years ago or 4 years ago, I started reading all the books of Jerry Prunell. He's not very well known, I think. I think his most famous book is like Falkenberg's Legion or something. And he's a bit one of the first to write military science fiction. And he has a nice combination. It's science fiction, but it feels like it could be like World War II or Vietnam, or the technology level stays quite low in a way. I think I used quite a bit of his ideas, but I mixed it up with a lot of stuff. And as I tried to explain before, because I was getting a bit stuck in my explanation, I was trying to explain why I choose this setting, and that's like the reason I chose it was like there's a design reason. I needed to have a setting where you would have a planet to explore with a relatively low technology level, and that logically led to saying like it must be in some future where there's already thousands of planets with like humans on them. But why do you need to explore the planet? Well, because all knowledge has been lost. And so,
yeah, I love that part.
But by design focus, I ended up choosing a story like this.
I get a strong feeling, or I like to at least imagine a Dune-like Frank Herbert type universe when I'm playing, especially if you choose like a desert planet. And that, so I mean, that's one possibility for people out there who are interested. And just to also piggyback on what you were saying, explaining the game as like a very, very high level for people who don't know what Advanced Tactics or Decisive Campaigns even is, this is like a tactical, turn-based, hex-based war game. So it's about moving your your chits. What are they called? Your counters, your NATO counters around the map.
You can say units, huh?
Yeah,
units that are represented as blocks. Right.
That's right. But I like to use the word chits since that's something that I remember from my tabletop days. We used to call those things chits. It's one of those games where you have some units that you're moving around along a hex-based map. And Advanced Tactics had a small economy in it. And now with the 4X part of Shadow Empires, that has obviously been expanded. I would call Shadow Empires something like Civilization meets Aurora 4X. That's what I would call
it. Oh, I like that. Yeah.
For anybody who's even familiar with Aurora 4X, it's a heavy logistical simulator. And I've always loved logistical simulators. And that's one of the things
that's a pretty wide range of potential outcomes in there. I can't think of two games that are more opposite of each other when regards to Civ or Aurora 4X.
You know, you have this. If you take like Civ 5, which has a hex-based element to it, and then you just put the complexity and the focus on logistics, which is obviously completely lacking from Civ, I feel like you end up with averaging those two, you might end up somewhere near Shadow Empire. Or at least it gives people who don't know anything about the game some vague idea of what we're talking about.
The one before the show began, I was kind of comparing this game to, so I mentioned Civilization. This game kind of reminded me a little bit of Civilization, but I was mentioning that this is the Civilization that I wanted, because it's kind of like Civilization on steroids, and I was kind of using the term, it's the Grognard Civilization, because there's a lot of times, like you were mentioning, like, I always wanted to play Civilization, but a lot of times when I play it, I feel it's very casual, it doesn't offer that much depth, and I'm like, I mean, it's good for just, I guess, if you have an hour or two, it's waste time, not really get too invested, but this game, like, I'm when I was playing it, I was like, I really love the storyline, and there's so much depth to this game in terms of logistics, supply, development. You have leaders, and not like the leaders that you have in Civilization, which are just like bare bones. Here you have, like, you have to keep an eye on certain leaders. There's a lot of depth to this game, so I really enjoyed that.
Good.
I'm kind of curious, since we're already got into Shadow Empire, I do have a couple of questions. So I'm kind of curious how long you've been developing Shadow Empire and how big your team is.
Well, let's tackle the first one first. I think it has been more than 3 years now. I'm in a stage where development has gone on way too long. And mostly because my ambition has been very large with this game. So that's also why we're getting close to release. And about team size, it's basically just me.
Oh, wow. So you're handling every aspect of the game, from the sound to music to AI to everything?
I do buy some stuff, you know, like from freelancers, for example, like some art or some sound. But I've actually been making quite a bit of art as well for the game. Maybe it shows, but basically I'm a one-man army. Yeah,
that's very impressive to handle the entire game. That's kind of like a monumental task.
It is, especially this game, Shadow Empire. I sort of put no limits at the start, and I think I created a very interesting and fun and special game, like a unique game that you cannot find anywhere else. But the scope of the game, the ambition I put into the design, it has been close to breaking point, but I managed to just keep it in, and it's now getting close to getting finished, at least for release. But it is the kind of game where I'm eager to, even after release, to continue working on it. Because there's so much other stuff I would like to put in there as well. But the amount of stuff I want to put in there, you know, it could be 10 years of development, to be honest. So you have to make choices at some point.
That's what DLCs are for.
well, we'll see about that. I think my publisher will be very happy to see DLCs, but I think at the start I've never charged for how do you say, extra content yet. So let's see how it goes after release. And I'm also very curious, you know, what the people who were going to like the game, what they would like to see added. So I want to sort of not fix myself on, you know, this is going to... I would like, for example, to add navies to the game. After release, it's a big development item that didn't make it in, but maybe like players will ask for something completely different, like more immersive leaders, for example, or more complicated, or not complicated, more intricate politics or diplomatics. I don't know. I want to keep an open mind there, what the players would like to see. And go from there after release. But
so what do you think the, you know, is obviously this is it's a huge job for one person to primarily be doing sort of on their own, and you've kind of already talked a little bit about this, but would you say it was the scope the most challenging aspect of this project, or was there something else that you would say, like, that was the biggest hurdle to overcome?
No, I think it's the scope. There's so many modules to the game, ranging from stuff like quite well known to Civilization players, like the technology tree, but there's the logistics, there's the economy system, there's the rather detailed military systems, but even there, like, you have all the, you know, all the rules wargamers know well, like entrenchment, concentric attacks, stacking rules, blah 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 blah. But on top of that, I also added, for example, that you could design and develop your own models of equipment. So you don't have like a generic light tank, for example. You create your own model. Maybe it's called the Spider Blitzer. And then after you develop the Spider Blitzer tank, which has its unique statistics, you can choose, for example, to upgrade it to the Spider Blitzer 2. And it's just, you know, it's a good idea. But I've had many good ideas to make the world more interesting. And there were so many ideas that it became, it became really a lot of work. But in the end, I think I'm quite happy with the result.
So while I was playing I know I mentioned earlier that I was very intrigued by the storyline. So I'm just kind of curious, because I haven't gotten as far as like Eric playing the game, but I'm kind of curious, as I'm playing the game, why will I uncover more secrets regarding the Disillusion War? Because that sounds really interesting. And I was starting to play, I was like, man, I hope they talk about this more. Well, like, as I expand, will I discover more secrets about that?
Yeah, I think you might find some more clues. But I held back to really put it into the game as its own proper module, like its own proper story module. I want to do it, but I want to do it well, with like an actual secret shadow force being present on the planet. And so no, I don't think you will. It's really a background story at this point, but I am planning to, for some future date, to expand on it, because as you, I'm quite happy with the background story, and it in a way it asks to be implemented in the game. The whole thing with the mysterious shadow, which is still present.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that very, when I played Stellaris with a buddy of mine, and we were playing, and I found out there was, like, a deeper story going on in the background to stuff that happened, like, hundreds or thousands of years before. So not only do you enjoy playing the game, but there's, like, a storyline that you're kind of, like, hungry to find out more about. And I love games that do that. And when I was going through the intro of this game, I was like, wow, this sounds really interesting. I want to, like, know more about this. And I was like, I'm looking forward to you doing that. So that's going to be awesome.
Well, you know, you catch some hints, but there's no gameplay based on the actual shadow nemesis which exists in the background story. However, as I said, there's clues. For example, you can make archaeological digs. You can find artifacts. Sometimes there are references made by leaders to this, to the past. But at the moment, it is at this level, and not like there's an actual. For example, what I've been thinking about doing is adding a player to the game, which is actually, like, for example, the surviving Shadow Lord on this planet, and was actually working against you and trying to turn other empires against you, or infiltrating your empire, or corrupting your leaders. But that would be a big task actually to do that properly. So that's why it's been parked for the moment.
Since you mentioned leaders, I'm kind of curious, because so the limited time that I played it, I noticed that I have to like hire leaders, and one thing that I think there was like a military or warrior league something like that, a warrior tribe that wanted to become part of my council. And I was like, yeah, of course, I'm going to have you guys part of it. The last thing I want to do is piss off the military. So, and as I was adding leaders, I was thinking in my head, I'm like, I wonder, do I have to kind of be concerned about their loyalty? Can like leaders rebel against me and like possibly like split my country in the future?
Yeah, they can.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Try to avoid it. Especially if like a leader with high seniority would choose to rebel against you, he could get a lot of support from the populace as well as your military forces. However, if it's like a nobody, you will be able to crush it quite easily. But it depends on the personality of the leader, because a lot of leaders would just choose to leave you, to say like, I'm going to look for fortune elsewhere. Bye-bye. It's only if they have a specific personality, like they're really ambitious or egocentric, or they can choose to actually rebel.
Wow.
And just so people understand that when he mentions egocentric or ambitious, these are all different traits and like points are allocated to every one of these categories. In fact, the character, the depth of just a character, I played the game a lot. I mean, I love it, and it's currently my like go-to game if I want to relax. And I say that the characters are extremely deep while not even really having looked at them. There's so much in this game that you can focus on, but I've seen at least there's so many different skills. And it's kind of nice that you present that information to the player, even though we don't really have to look at all the details. You know, you can just kind of get a summary of the different people. There's like, but the mechanics are all there. I mean, you can feel the depth of the game, which to me is a big selling point. But the way you've done it in a way where you take away, like you make something simple, like the big font things are the ones you got to care about more, but you actually give us the smaller details. I like that. Anyway, and there's a whole economy that we haven't talked about yet. Like the economy is, I think this is, if I had to guess, or if I had to say, it's probably the biggest change between your previous games and this one. It looks like it's built upon the system I've seen before with Advanced Tactics Gold. You had something with minerals and oil and decisive campaigns. I guess you had oil as well. But now you have everything from prospecting for minerals to you know, then you need to build a building to harvest them. You have to build buildings to power your buildings, which are harvesting things. You have to build industry to have enough industrial points to build the building, to power the building that is going to, you know, I mean, this chain that you've built is...
That's really cool.
It's pretty awesome. And, I mean, it's complicated for sure, but...
Are you managing to wrap your head around it?
Yeah, I mean, it all makes sense. It's just, when you're explaining it, I think, I hope I'm not doing the game a disservice by trying to explain it and just scaring people, but it just makes sense. Like, okay, you need a power building for power. It's done very similar in other games before. Like, I don't know, just think of SimCity. You needed your power, and then you needed your waste management, you needed your water. So a lot of these people have seen these things before. But just the fact that you put all that into a war game, maybe my question for you after all this is, what would you label this as, a 4X-based war game, or a war game-based 4X game, or... A 4X and war game, part war game, part 4X, but it's really actually a city builder? Because you can probably put any of those adjectives to this game or these descriptions. What was your design focus? Which one did you want the most?
Well, as I said, like my biggest blessing or error, depends how you want to look at it, is that the scope was a bit too big. So basically, I tried to get everything in on more or less an equal basis. I like all these elements, and I wanted them all to be present, so they're all present. And the big work for me was to make all these different elements interconnect and work with each other, and that took quite some time. but we got there. So, and just to go back to the previous remark on the economy, I want to point out that I've also tried to design the game in a way, especially if you're not eager to necessarily win, to be able to play it a bit as you like. So, for example, if you do not feel like figuring out like which asset, which building, if you like, is going to require energy, and if you already have a reactor to produce energy, blah, blah, you can just choose to not build anything as well. There's like a public economy going on, which you control directly, and there's a private economy going on at the same time. And here it's like your populace is just creating new buildings as time goes by, and they're expanding your private economy, of which you benefit by getting taxes. So it is possible to not touch the construction of new buildings, and you will still expand. I did the same with the military, by the way. Like, there you have your regular military forces and your militia. You start with a militia, and your militia just expands automatically. It's like an autonomous organization for every zone, and they call up new militia members as long as they're enthusiastic, as long as the militancy in a zone is high enough, and you will get replacement troops and new units, and you will be able to wage a military campaign without touching the whole military system, without touching the whole production and support system for the military, if you would like to play like that.
Yeah, I did notice that. I think, I don't know if I've seen another game even do that, especially if its focus wasn't entirely on city building. You see private versus public economy. I mean, for example, I've seen it in both Aurora 4X and in Distant Worlds Universe, but it's just, it's much more, it works more for the player in this sense, in this game, I mean, because, yeah, it can, like, if the private economy, let's say you're short on a resource like metal or something, the private economy, you don't just get the taxes, it looks like you get actual metal if they choose to build a, of course, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think if they build a metal mine, you actually get some metal from it as well.
Exactly.
They can kind of even, they can even compensate for resources you're missing. I guess that makes sense too. If there was a private economy, they would most likely seek to balance out the deficits of the nation. So, yeah.
However, you get much less than if you would have constructed the mine, the metal mine yourself, because if it's your mine, you get everything, and if it's their mine, well, you get a bit.
I like the logistics system too in the game. I noticed there's a lot of depth to it. Like, you have to build roads or rails. I noticed, Tortuga, you were building rails as you were kind of like expanding. And then you develop truck stations, supply bases. Like, there was so much, like, it was just getting to my Grognard side. I was like, man, this is awesome.
Well, thank you. It took quite a while to get it where it is now.
The only part that I wasn't able to kind of touch on or haven't seen yet is the diplomacy system, but I heard that it is like very, there's a lot of depth to it. It's a large system. Like, from the features on the product page, it says that minor regimes, I think I ran into a few of them when I was playing, can become a vassal, similar to like EU4, or even join my empire, which I thought was kind of cool. And then there are major regimes, which I'm assuming like are the big boys on the block.
Exactly.
And then you could set up packs and deals with them.
Exactly. The majors are like your empire. They could have been played by a human player, but most of you will play against the computers. So in that case, they will be played by an AI. And it plays by the same rules as the human player, where the minors are, well, they're a bit like the militia forces inside your zone.
Yeah, I saw it kind of like, to go back to our civilization analogy, the miners are like the city-states in civilization, whereas the majors are like the civilization.
So the miners are there to die, and the majors are your competition.
Well, you know, you can trade with them? yeah, you can trade with them. I think, Vic, of course.
There's no trading with other regimes because I have to explain. Actually, there's traders in the game, and there's different trade houses in the game. Actually, the trade houses are a bit hidden, but if you look at the code, what's actually simulated below, there's different trade houses, and every empire or every area of an empire has its own trade house, and an empire or you can choose to trade with the traders, sell, buy items, but then the traders will choose to trade between different trade houses if they can make an advantageous deal as well. And here you can influence, because for example you can make a trade deal with another major regime, which will sort of open up the border so they can trade more efficiently. And the miners, they also have trade houses, so items flow over the map, but they do not flow at the same speed everywhere. And you can increase the flow of trade by making trade deals. It's also possible to put like tariffs, might be something that's appealing to Americans. You can put tariffs on other regimes. And that would probably mean a little bit less trade, but the trade that's still going on would give you a reasonable income.
It's not like there's a U.S.-China trade war going on.
It's more than U.S.-China, but anyway.
Sorry for the pun against United States. There's a lot of people outside the United States who like tariffs as well, even here in France.
Yeah, my brother-in-law works in the wine industry, and so there were a bunch of new tariffs that I think they put them on pause, but there were a whole bunch of tariffs that were really going to savage sort of U.S. European wine sales that were about to go in last I had talked to him.
Yeah, it's quite worrisome. There's a lot of, real life, it starts to get worrisome real life when it starts to resemble your game.
Yeah. I mean, Plague Inc., right? If anybody's ever played Plague Inc. Okay, Vic, I have another question for you.
Sure.
I've seen the games you design. I'm kind of curious, what kind of games do you like to play? I mean, I guess the first answer I'm most expecting is what free time to play what games. But let's pretend at least that you have free time, or what kind of games do you like to play on your own?
Yeah, on top of that, like after 10 hours before a computer screen, how much more time do I want to spend in front of it?
Yeah, maybe that's a good point.
Honestly, I'm going to give you an honest answer. I don't play enough. I have a post-it saying, Victor, when Shadow Empire is finished, play more games, because it's important. I watch quite a lot of YouTubes. I do play my own games, but it's partly for testing. But it's good to play at least your own games. And the last game I actually played must have been, I think it was like Jeff Vogel's game, the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Don't remember the title. I tried that one out. I think I tried Stardew Valley. I think. Really, I'm not a big board game sometimes, yes. Scene. I don't have a lot of time. I mostly watch a lot of YouTubes and look at other people playing games. I wish I could play more games. I think I played most Slytherin games, just taking a look. Slytherin and Matrix games. I tried Europa Universalis. I tried a lot of stuff, but I look for an hour or something. I don't have the time to spend 40 or 50 hours with a game.
Another
sadly,
curse I've heard is when you're a game developer, that when you're playing another person's game, you're just constantly in game development mode, and you're thinking, I could do that this way. So it's hard to like just relax and let your brain go to play a game. At least I have a friend who says that he said I can't play anything because I just start thinking how I would do it better.
on, on, top of that, like, my games are really complicated, so I don't, it's not really a pleasure to try to play a complex game afterwards. So I have a tendency to, for example, I do play quite a lot of like interactive fiction applications on my smartphone. But I don't know if they really count as games, right? Because interactive fiction is a bit in between. So I tend to play games actually which relax me and where there's not a lot of complexity.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, people might be interested in hearing like what is it that Vic likes. So.
You know, normally I would at the like one of the questions I would have during an interview is like, is there any possibility that you would develop the that you would port the game to like the mobile platform for like iPad or iPhone? But like as I was going through this game, I was like, yep, no, that's not, this is not going to happen. I'm not even going to ask it because
it's a big no-no. Yeah.
Yeah. So I made sure I was.
I mean, well, what why do you say that, Jean? What leads you to believe that this wouldn't make it to a mobile platform?
Well, I guess when I was as I was playing it, right, I noticed that it's, well, one thing, it's, it feels primarily designed for the, I mean, you designed it for the keyboard and mouse. I've noticed that there's a lot of tabs. There's a lot of what do you call it, screen real estate that needs to be taken, because you have a lot of, like even looking at the main screen, you have the stats on the bottom left, then you have more stats on the bottom right. On the top right, you have a whole bunch of tabs. On the top left, you have a number of tabs. So there's a lot of lot of information on the screen. And I mean, you can try to like move stuff around and put it on a tablet, but like again, like you were saying, and we mentioned this in previous podcasts, mobile gaming, unfortunately, you know, even though like Fortnite and many other games are being ported to the mobile platform, a lot of people are hesitant to actually spend money on the mobile platform. I was actually talking about it today with a coworker of mine. I was just like, it's really weird because he had a Nintendo DS. He was like, yeah, I used to pay like 30, 40 bucks for Nintendo DS games. And I'm like, you know, it's funny that people are okay with spending 30, 40 bucks for full-fledged titles. But when it comes down to the iPhone or iPad, like if you develop a deluxe game, like let's say you bring Shadow Empire there and you slap on like a $40 price tag, chances are, you know, most people are going to be like, yeah, I'm not going to spend $40 on this game. But if it comes out on the PC, I'll spend $40. And it's like, what's the difference? Like, it doesn't make any sense. But I guess it's the frame of mind people see is like, I'm not going to spend a lot of money on a game for the phone or tablet, but I'll spend a lot of money for a game on my laptop or desktop. It's, so there's always that disconnect. So I notice why developers are kind of like, you know, going to that free-to-play model or, you know, just staying on the laptop or desktop.
Yeah, I think I agree. But you know, with this game, it's just it's a technical issue. The screen of well, a phone, but also a tablet is just too small to display all the information. So the game is too complex actually for the device, for the format.
I think I have one more question for you, at least from my end. Advanced Tactics had a really nice scenario editor. And
yeah.
I'm just curious, is that something,
no,
considering they both have this random nature, is that something you're considering for Shadow Empire?
No, no, it's not on the table. It's the algorithms and the amount of data is so complex that to make it like accessible would be so much work and would be so error prone that I'm not going to release any editors. Maybe after release, I might release some partial editors, like allow people to, for example, create their own story modules. I think that's something like that's more limited. So I could actually make it a safe space to create it. That would be possible, but to allow the versatility of Advanced Tactics, that would be rather impossible.
And I think it makes sense from the standpoint of like setting up the majors and all that, but also, and like even like someone trying to handcraft where all the resources are springing up, but also piggyback on that, what about modding? How modding friendly do you think this game will be?
But as I said, it's going to be released without any editors, so in that respect, it will not be very mother-friendly.
I just really want my sandworms in my Dune environment.
Yeah, as I said, you know, one of the problems of being a one-man army is, especially after you have already done several titles, is that there's support work also cropping up with every title you do. And at some point, you don't want to make every title like a wargame design studio. Like Advanced Tactics is this. I did also release the community project for the Decisive Campaign series, which you can get for free on my website if you own one of the DC titles. But I don't want every game to be like fully equipped with editors and stuff, and basically be a change what you want thing. I prefer to have several games which you cannot edit, like for example Barbarossa. It is what it is. And have some games, ideally only one game, I still have to get there, which is like your game that you can change and edit to make it become something completely different. Like the Wargame Design Studio. At the moment, I would still recommend Advanced Tactics for doing this. But it is on the, how do you say, on my planning horizon to make a successor to that game at some point as well. Because I like giving people the opportunity to create basically their own games.
Well, I mean, just because I have played so many hours in this game already, I just feel like I'll come back and also say that without any of those things, this is an instant buy for me, and I'm already enjoying the hell out of it in its pre-release state, so I can't wait for the release. Really looking forward to it.
Well, thank you.
I'm kind of curious. So as I was playing the game, I was trying to do the like learning curve and trying to figure out how certain systems work. I'm kind of curious, are you planning to like add a tutorial either at launch or after launch?
Can you define tutorial?
So basically like assist, I would say probably maybe like a campaign or maybe a couple scenarios that kind of like one scenario would say, this is how the military works. Another scenario, this is how the economy works. This is how the logistics system works. And just kind of like maybe like a half a dozen to a dozen scenarios where it kind of like breaks down each system. Because what I've been doing to like learn the game, I should probably read the manual, but I hate reading a lot of times. So I've been watching Tortuga. So whatever he does, I'm like, oh, so that's how you do that. So yeah, Tortuga right now is my tutorial.
And that's your answer. I will be the tutorial.
But the manual is already at 220 pages, not counting all the screenshots and illustrations. But the problem with tutorials is like a classical tutorial, and I think you were sort of aiming at the classical tutorial there. It's very hard because the whole system is set up to create like a random planet procedurally generated. So everything is different every time. It's very hard to script a tutorial. So what I did is I added an advisor in the game, which will sort of, the algorithms behind the advisor will analyze the position of the player, and then the advisor will, for example, tell you like, you know, your food is going down, soon you will have problems, you might want to consider to build a farm, and then add a button which says like, tell me how to build a farm. That was sort of my solution how to get some of the functionality of a tutorial in the game. And anything you do not understand or problems you walked into, tell me, and I will try to make the advisor aware to advise future players who find themselves in the same situation how to tackle a problem like that.
And I don't mean to just toot my own horn, but I'm sure I'm going to end up making a tutorial series for this on YouTube for Shadow Empires. So I think people have found the one I did for Advanced Tactics Gold at least somewhat helpful. So that's actually the best way for me to learn. That's the reason why I take to that media for tutorials. It's because that's the media I prefer myself. So Jean, don't worry.
Do you watch your own tutorials?
Yes, it's a recursive loop.
I think this is a really interesting game for me. I don't do quite as many 4X games as Tortuga, but I do know that this is something that has really intrigued me, and I'm looking forward to. As we kind of wrap this up and kind of bring it home, is there anything that you really wanted to talk about, Vic, that we didn't discuss or that we didn't address, or what do you want to leave us with as we kind of bring this interview to a close?
Another open question. that's about as open as they come, right? What do you want to leave us with? What I would like to leave you guys with is like, please do tell me about any stuff that you find too hard to understand, because I'm still working very hard at the moment to polish the game and to add stuff to the game to make the player understand sometimes rather complex systems. So like feedback, critical feedback is always extremely welcome. And I'm not going to do a sales pitch here. I think it's just, I could sum up like unique selling points and stuff, but...
if there's anything that we missed though, like it might be something that we simply aren't aware of. So if you have anything that we didn't touch on that...
plenty, yeah. Okay. No, but seriously, like you didn't touch upon, for example, the planet generation system, which is...
That's true, that's true.
Which does, I think, a very good simulation of how planets are actually created, which goes to an enormous number of variables, including atmosphere, even alien evolution on the planet. Geology, rainfall, wind, temperatures, climates, etc., etc. We touched upon the leaders, but not upon their factions or on elections. We touched a bit upon the economy. We discussed that quite well, though we didn't discuss like zones, the concept of zones and how you can even repaint or redraw the borders of your zones within your empire. Nor did we talk much about diplomacy, which is actually indeed, I can confirm, present. Sometimes it's a bit on the basis of don't call us, we call you. The AI will call you with demands or with proposals. But once you, that's another thing we didn't talk about, organizations, you can build a number of different councils, up till 9. And one of them is the Foreign Affairs Council. And if you have a foreign affairs council and you invest budget into this council, it will generate your stratagems. Stratagems are a type of cards you can play at a cost of political points. And if this foreign affairs council, it will create you diplomatic stratagems where you can, for example, open contact with another major regime, and then you can propose all kind of deals like trade deals, scientific deals, military pacts, etc. There's quite a number of detail we didn't discuss about the military side, but maybe it's best we leave that there. It includes, rules about headquarters. You can play posture stratagems, like put units on the offensive, defensive, but there's many varieties there, depending on your regime profile. We could talk about replacement troops, quality levels, replacing troops, upgrading troops, scrapping troops.
Well, hearing about everything that we, you know, that we didn't touch on either really drives home the point how deep and detailed this game is, or just how inadequate as an interviewer we are.
Yeah. Why not both?
No. I think you touched upon enough subjects. I mean, it's just 1 hour interview, so it's impossible to discuss everything.
I do have one last question, because I'm very curious. So I know this is not with the base game, but I'm very intrigued where this game is going. So I'm kind of curious. So like I said, I was very interested in this dissolution war and how this empire broke up and then we're reconquering the planet. So I'm kind of curious down the road, you know, like if you are to do a sequel, would you ever like integrate a, like the land-based environment with maybe like a space-based environment, so to maybe not only reclaim the planet but maybe reclaim the empire?
Yeah, well, it definitely is in my notes.
But that's
like doubling the ambition once again, right? So
yeah, because I mean, like, that to me is like, you know, when I was thinking about that, I was like, it would be really cool to go from the land and then say, all right, look, we conquered this planet. Now let's go to other one.
I mean, there's something to be said about, I'm sure we remember, what was the game, Spore, and how it ended up not succeeding because it just tried to focus on too much. Otherwise, I would just recommend Vic just create a game where we start at the dawn of humanity. We get to play all the way until Shadow Empire, and then we get to play like, you know, an 8,000 year period. That'd be great if you could do that. But
yeah, that's like, yeah, the game of everything.
Exactly.
But, that's a good title.
No. But I think it's a good question. It's really something I would like to do one day. But I think we have to take it one step at a time. And also, like, before you build stuff on top of what you have, make sure it's really stable first. Especially if it's something so ambitious, if you want to put that on top of it. So, and I can say I did look at Empire of the Fading Suns. So it is something that's tempting, yes.
I can't wait. If that actually happens, that's going to scratch all the itches that I have, you know. So that's something that's going to be awesome.
But it's weird. This game, I haven't had that response with previous games. I see a lot of people respond. In fact, there's already a lot there. And there's a lot of people who respond with, I would really like to see this in there as well. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, in the one game. Where
it seems to trigger wanting more.
Yeah, I'm curious to see. I mean, I know we're wrapping up here, but I'm really curious to see how folks respond to this differently, perhaps, than some of your previous games, just because I've noticed, and I think you're touching on it, that Space 4X fans, you know, I know it's planet-based, but it's still sort of in a sort of sci-fi space sort of world. Space or 4X fans tend to love to rivet count, if not as much, then maybe even more so than like historical wargaming fans. So I think it'll be really interesting to see kind of the response and how it differs and how it's the same.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
But with that being said, I think this brings us to a good stopping point. So, Vic, I want to thank you.
Big thanks to you guys for hosting me. You've been swell. And I'm going to link your podcast on my website because I listened to some other episodes and I think it's really interesting what you're doing. And keep up the good work.
Well, thanks, Vic. And again, thanks for coming on.
We appreciate that. Thank you. And we'll catch you guys in the next one. See you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.